I love Wendy Williams. Oh, she's an icon, she's a legend, and she is the moment. Look, from 2008 to 2021, Wendy hosted over 2,000 episodes of her show, The Wendy Williams Show. She got an Emmy nomination for Best Host and honestly gave us some of the best memes and clips of all time. Then in 2021, Wendy kind of just disappeared, right? No one really knew what was going on. It was all speculation. And then it was like she was dealing with health problems and it was sad. It was like, what's going on? Where's Wendy? But we all kind of knew like something was happening. The show officially ended in 2022 with no updates about Wendy. And then in February of 2024, it was announced that Wendy had been diagnosed with dementia and aphasia. And I think sadly, a lot of us realized we'd probably never hear from Wendy again. Oh, it was just so sad. But then a few weeks later, there was another announcement. There was going to be a documentary about Wendy. And on top of that, she was going to be the executive producer. So this was supposed to give us an update on what's really been going on with her. If you watched, did you watch? Oh, who approved that? Who approved that? Because it was one of the saddest documentaries ever. I couldn't even watch it. It was just like, this shouldn't have even been put out. The documentary featured her health problems, her alleged alcoholism, her financial issues, which made the fans think like, okay, I guess Wendy wanted people to know about this, or at least she was okay with it. I don't know. Well, almost immediately, her family and friends started speaking out against this documentary. They called it abusive and said that Wendy's medical conditions made it impossible for her to have actually agreed to the show. Well, it turns out Wendy was under something called a conservatorship. A conservatorship is a legal arrangement where one person is appointed by a court to handle personal and/or business decisions for another. Some states call it a guardianship. Others save the term guardian for minor children. Point being that it's a big deal to be under conservatorship or guardianship because you've been stripped of the right to make certain decisions for yourself. Now, this was allegedly to help her manage her life and money in this difficult time. But a lot of fans, you know, myself included, were left wondering, like, is she okay? Who's really calling the shots for Miss Wendy? And is she in trouble? It seems like we only hear about conservatorships when it comes to celebrities. But after I did some digging, it turns out it's way more common than we think. So, let's talk about it, shall we? Welcome to the dark history of conservatorships. Friends, I hope you're having a wonderful day today. My name is Bailey Sarian, and I'd like to welcome you to my podcast, Dark History. Hi. Here, we believe history does not have to be boring. It might be tragic. Sometimes it's happy. But either way, it's our dark history. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. I'm always posting new content for you. And let me know what you think in the comment section down below, because I read them at the end. Now, let's get into it, huh? So to understand the origin of conservatorships, we have to talk about Francis Farmer. I know, who's Francis Farmer? What kind of farm did he own? Great question. Well, Francis Farmer was actually an American actress. Yeah, not a farmer. She was born in 1913 in Seattle, Washington. Frances came from a poor family, and after her parents divorced when she was four, she was raised by her mom. And from a young age, Frances just knew she wanted to do something bigger and better in her life. She worked her butt off in school and eventually made it to the University of Washington, where she realized she had a passion for acting. She starred in every single production at college and even started acting in professional plays. And that's when she decided she was going to move to New York and try and make it as an actor. So she goes and she auditions for anything and everything she can get into. And all her hustling pays off. She manages to land a movie deal with Paramount Pictures. You go, girl. Back then, you would sign a contract with a movie studio for a certain number of years and only appear in movies that studio made and nobody else. It seems like a nice deal because it's like, oh, it's a 5-year contract or something. And it's kind of like you're guaranteed 5 years of work. It seems like a sweet deal. But, you know, the truth was, studios had a reputation for being extremely controlling with their actors and actresses. Rumor has it they still actually do this. I read it somewhere, so it must be true. But I heard they do this, like Marvel will do this, where you can, like, you'll sign a deal and you are agreeing to doing like X amount of Marvel movies and you can't work for anybody else, you know? But I could be lying. But I think it's true. Anywho, what I'm getting at is, okay, great. So it's 1936, and it was a big year for Frances. She got her studio deal, and she made her very first movie. And she ended up marrying another up-and-coming actor named Leif Erikson. I know. I was like, could you imagine? Like, this is my husband, Leif. 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 It's just Leif. I don't know. Let me know your thoughts on Leif. I just imagine, like, you're being, like, sexual and stuff. You're like, oh, baby, give it to me, you know? But you're like, oh, Leif, do me right, Leif. That was my takeaway from the story, Leif, I know. Anywho, so they get married. And to be honest, the marriage wasn't really about love, let's say. Frances was, she was smart. And she knew that getting married to another actor on the rise was, like, good PR. Okay, so their marriage was more of like a professional partnership behind closed doors. And I guess it worked because her next two movies did really well. Then in 1936, Frances Farmer starred in an Oscar-winning movie called Come and Get It. And this made her an it girl overnight. Over the next few years, Frances had a little more trouble getting ahead of her reputation. She was still working a ton, doing plays, hit movies, but there were rumors going around about her being difficult to work with. And let me tell you, in the industry, once you get the label difficult to work with, it's like game over. It's so annoying. Frances became known as a little bit of a rebel because she would stand up for herself and she had opinions. Who would have thought? And because of this, she rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And then, the cherry on top, it was discovered that she was having an affair with a director. I'm not judging, but everyone else was. Now, because her husband with the fantastic name Leif was a famous actor, their marriage gets thrown into the spotlight. So of course, you know, the media is reporting on this, and who are they gonna side with? Not her, she's having an affair. They're gonna go with Leif. Right? So everyone's loving Leif. And this is when people really start to say very nasty and hurtful things about Frances behind her back. In 1942, Frances found herself without any job offers for the first time in years. She was unemployed and no studios or directors wanted to hire her because of her reputation. On top of that, on June 12th, her husband Leif, divorces her and gets married to another actress on the same day. Yeah. Petty. Petty. Petty, but whatever. He knew what he was doing. A few months later, it's October of 1942. She's driving home late at night. You know, there are a few different accounts about what happens next. But what we do know is that a police officer pulls her over and, like, comes up to her car. I guess Frances was driving with her headlights on in an area that was called a dim-out zone. So in an area called a dim-out zone, you weren't supposed to, like, be driving with your headlights on. It was common during World War II because of, like, potential air raids. It was a thing. So they wanted you to just drive in the dark, I guess. Long story short, she gets arrested. The police officer said that Frances didn't have her license on her. But many people believe Frances was actually arrested because maybe she gave the officer attitude. We don't know. We weren't there. Now, she's released about 8 hours later, but obviously she's a famous actress. So the story makes it all over the tabloids. Ugh. She was Lindsay before Lindsay. This leads to Paramount canceling her contract, essentially firing Frances. So now Frances is just, like, out of luck completely. And at this time, if you did not have a studio contract, it basically meant your career was over. After a few rocky months, she's hired on a movie called No Escape. But she only completed a single day of filming because on January 13th, 1943, I guess Frances gets into a fight with the hairdresser. Well, it depends. Was the hairdresser doing a bad job? Like, maybe the hairdresser did a really bad job. We don't know. But either way, not that I'm trying to victim blame or anything. It's just we don't know. But either way, Frances is upset and she storms off set and goes back to the hotel that she's living in now. She starts drinking at the bar with some friends. She's getting really, really loose. Allegedly, she takes off her sweater and she smashes a mirror in the bar. She's pissed. She's had a rough day. After that, she goes back to her room and she knocks out. Then, knock, knock. Hello, it's the police. It's about 3 a.m. and they are here to arrest her. I mean, technically the reason for their arrest should be because she like smashed the mirror and whatnot, but they said that they're arresting her because Frances had never paid off the fines from her first arrest, the one that I just mentioned. But Frances claims that they never told her why she was being arrested, which is why she didn't pay originally. The next morning, Frances goes before a judge. She was allegedly not allowed to see a lawyer. In court, Frances tries to reason with the judge and asks him, like, have you ever had a broken heart? And the judge ignores her and asks if Frances is an alcoholic. And Frances says, quote, I put liquor in my milk, I put liquor in my coffee, and in my orange juice. What do you want me to do? Starve to death? I mean, yeah. What do you want her to do? Starve to death? I mean, if that makes her an alcoholic, then I don't know. Well, for not paying her fines, Frances gets sentenced to 180 days in jail. She asks to use the telephone, and the judge says no. So Frances throws a bottle of ink off the desk towards the judge. When the police try to restrain her, she gets into even more of a fight. She's taken back to jail, and she's charged now with assault. Court declares her mentally incompetent, meaning that they believe she cannot take care of herself. It was at this point that Frances lost all control she had over her life. And this leads to what we would call today a conservatorship. On January 20th, she's taken to a psychiatric hospital in Los Angeles called the La Crescenta Private Sanitarium, completely against her will. And it's not long before the doctors start to give her insulin. I know, I was like, insulin? She's diabetic? Okay, whatever. Well, that she wasn't diabetic. So listen, get this. If your body has too much insulin, you can go into a coma. We've talked about this a little bit in our diabetes episode, but also, I think I did a murder mystery on this where like wives who wanted to kill their husbands would like inject insulin into them and would kill them. It's a thing. Doctors would inject people they considered mentally incompetent with insulin to put them into a medically induced coma for a few hours or even a few days. This was called insulin shock therapy. Now, these comas weren't just like taking a nap. Frances described the insulin shock therapy as, quote, brutal physical attack which not only stunned the brain cells but shocked the body as well and left the patient racked with nausea and pain. Now, at first, doctors said that this was for her depression and it was meant to keep her calm. But really, that just meant it made patients like Frances easier to control. It also made it hard for Frances to understand what was going on. I mean, she's completely like disoriented, she can't leave, you know. So in April, Frances was supposed to be released. But a newspaper reported that she had relapsed and was required to stay at the hospital longer. So Frances, she's freaking over this shit. She's like, I'm breaking out of here. And guess what she does? She manages to escape the hospital. She hitchhikes right out of there. And when she's able to get away, she contacts her mom, who was still living back in Seattle. So her mom, Lillian, comes to Los Angeles and arranges to officially take Frances out of the hospital. Now, in order to do this, the courts have to make Lillian, her mom, her legal guardian. Even though, at this point, Frances is 30 years old. Today, this is what the courts would essentially call a conservatorship. It's the same thing, but the official name has just changed over time. Nowadays, in California, people under the age of 18 are assigned guardians versus people over the age of 18 are assigned conservatorships. It depends state by state. But it's essentially the same thing. So by the end of 1943, The courts, they actually appointed Lillian to be Francis's guardian. Francis is released, and both she and her mom go back to Seattle. So once she's released, she's back at home, right? She's able to, like, maybe hopefully just kind of come back to herself. And a producer finds her phone number or whatever and reaches out to Francis because he wants to hire her for a film.
A film, you say?
Well, guess what? She's like,
I'm actually not interested.
Click, and like turns them down. Now, when Lillian, her mom, finds out, oh, she's pissed off. She is pissed the fuck off. She files a complaint saying that Francis is insane for turning down work and for wanting to get out of Hollywood. Lillian took note that her daughter, Francis, she was acting a little strange. She would go for long walks and then run back into the house saying like someone was following her. She would play the piano or the radio really, really loud and say this was to, quote, drown out the voices of fear. End quote. I feel that. By March of 1944, Lillian is like over her shit and sends Francis back to the hospital. And this time, with Francis, she had her rights to any sort of trial completely signed away. She was questioned by doctors who immediately declared her insane and diagnosed her with schizophrenia. Back then, people didn't talk about anxiety or depression or freaking stress, really. If you were a woman and you were like having any type of feelings, they would call you hysterical, unstable, schizophrenic, a woman, you know? And then they would just lock you up. So a judge ordered Francis to be committed to a new psych ward. This one was called the Western Washington State Hospital for the Insane at Steilacoom. It was said here, Francis received electroshock therapy. Ugh. So scary. Electroshock therapy is a medical treatment where electric currents are sent through the brain, which would trigger like essentially a controlled seizure. And they would do this because it was a treatment for mental illnesses, for depression and schizophrenia or whatever they were dealing with. They would just blast the brain. And apparently electroshock is like just as horrible as it sounds. It's super painful. It was common for patients to break bones and even have intense memory loss. On top of this, Francis was also given something called hydrotherapy. Now this was where people were forced to sit in bathtubs of ice water for hours. I know. Because I know a lot of you like to do, what's it called, cold plunge, where you, I've done it like once or twice, where you jump into cold water, or you whatever, but you just do it for maybe like 1 to 2 minutes. Well, she was doing it for hours. Yeah, you try doing it for hours. After a few months, the doctors reported that Francis's behavior was improving. She was allegedly less erratic and more calm. But here's the funny part. It's not funny, but like in her own autobiography, Frances said that she was putting on an act so she could finally get released, and it worked. She's like, yeah, I'm great. I can name all 50 states. Alaska, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida. Just kidding. Good for her. But her freedom, sadly, didn't last long. Her mom was so annoyed that Frances wouldn't go back to acting. She just couldn't understand. Like, don't you want to be famous? So in 1945, Frances was dragged back to the state-run insane asylum, Steilacoom. But this time, it was somehow worse. I wonder why her mom hated her so much. That's so sad. Okay, so she gets there and she's like, shit, I'm back. Well, she's examined, she's stripped naked, her nails get cut, they freaking shave her head. They completely shave her head. And then she was sent to the violent ward, which is called Ward T. So they send you here when, like, you are super violent. It's for, like, the most violent psychopaths and criminals. So it didn't really make sense why they were putting her there, but they were. In these rooms, there was like no ventilation, no windows. It was dark. People would be chained up by their wrists and ankles and just left completely alone, as if that's going to fix your problems. Any kind of disobedience would result in shock therapy. Worst of all, on top of all this, there were rumors that the guards would allow soldiers from the nearby army base to come in and rape the patients. Yeah, allegedly. 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 I believe it, though. Now, Frances stayed in the asylum for a total of 5 years. She had committed no crimes to earn that frickin' 5-year sentence, and she was a legal adult. If she hadn't been put into a conservatorship, as we would come to call it, she never would have had to endure this brutal treatment. Finally, in March of 1950, Frances gets a parole hearing. So at this hearing, they ask Frances to talk about the weather for a minute. You know, small talk. And then they ask if she can count to 50 and back. So she does. She does both of them. She performs perfectly. She's like, yes, I can count. And then boom. It's like nothing happened. She's free to go. It's like, damn, that's all I had to do? Couldn't have done this 5 years ago? Okay. Many people believe that she was only given the parole hearing because her father had requested it. Apparently, he wanted Frances back home to care for her mother. Oh, I'm going to care for her. I'm going to wheel her right into a home. Bye. Have fun. I would love to. So she's released and she ends up living, Frances, she ends up living with her parents and she's taking care of them. But it's kind of at like gunpoint because she knows if she doesn't behave herself or do exactly what they want, they're going to send her away again. So for the rest of her life, Frances kept a low profile. And I mean, who can blame her? Most people saw Frances as a tragic Hollywood celebrity, a star who couldn't handle fame, you know? It wasn't until years later, again, when she put out an autobiography, it was called, Will There Really Be a Morning? This is when people really started to understand the abuse that she was going through. And it turns out, Frances's story was just the beginning. So let's fast forward a few decades. Conservatorships still really aren't like widely known or talked about, but all of that changes when a little someone named Britney Spears came into the picture. So Miss Britney Jean Spears was born into a little town called Macomb, Mississippi on December 2nd, 1981, making her a Sagittarius, and we love that. But when she was about 11 years old, she was a member of the Mickey Mouse Club, and Britney, she quickly got attention for her dancing skills, and she was just such a performer. At 15, she signed a record contract with a company called Jive Records. And in 1998, when she was only 16, Britney released her first song, Baby One More Time. She was 16? Oh my God. When you think of it like that, damn, she's just a baby.
Oh, babe, how was I supposed to know that something wasn't right here?
Thank you. I don't think I have to tell you, but that was a bop. And it was number one on the billboards within months. And it topped all the charts. I mean, MTV had the music video on loop. We were living. We were dying. We were like, Britney is everything. She's a superstar. But I'm sure you remember the media back then was just awful, vicious. Today, you would never find mainstream news outlets demanding to know whether a 16-year-old had fake boobs or not, okay? Or was still a virgin, because they were asking her these questions. But back in the late 90s, that's exactly what they were doing to Miss Britney. They slut-shamed her for wearing short skirts. They criticized her every move. They criticized her song lyrics. They criticized everything. She became a pariah in the media for being scandalous and sexual when she was only a teenager just wearing outfits that a lot of teenagers were wearing. Even though the media liked to attack her and the critics liked to call her music shallow, the public, we loved her. We didn't care. Shut up, everyone. She was great. And, you know, from this single on, Britney was working nonstop. She released 2 more albums in the next 2 years. She was nominated for Grammys. She performed Slave for You at the VMAs wearing that snake around her neck. I don't like snakes. Don't put one around me. Thank you. She starred in Crossroads. It was really bad, but we still watched it. We were like, Britney, we still love you. We'll forgive you for this one. It's a little weird. She was dating Justin Timberlake. I mean, she was an icon. But even while her career continued to skyrocket, things were going downhill pretty fast in her personal life. In 2002, her relationship with that shithead Justin Timberlake ended. It was all over the tabloids. Everyone blamed Miss Britney. including that shithead, Justin Timberlake. Millions of people started turning against her because of a relationship that they knew nothing about. And the hate was intense and it was overwhelming. It was a lot. So then we started to watch poor Miss Britney kind of unravel. She started to make some questionable choices. I mean, I think she was just trying to reclaim her life, but you know, the media, they didn't think that. The next year she got married in Vegas, but the marriage was annulled just like 55 hours later. Then in 2004, after 3 months of knowing each other, she married this other shithead, Kevin Federline. Remember when she got with him and we were like, no, Britney, no, no. She did, and we were like, fuck. Oh, he's trash. Trash, K-Fed? Anyway, she ended up having 2 boys with Mr. K-Fed. They ended up getting a divorce just a couple years later in 2006. Of course, I'm glossing over a lot of details, I know. This is about conservatorship. So this is when it looked like to the public that Britney was like really losing her grip. She said, quote, I know now that I was displaying just about every symptom of perinatal depression, sadness, anxiety, fatigue. Being a new mom is challenging enough without trying to do everything under a microscope. No one was around to see me spiral except every paparazzo in America. She just needs some love and support. In the divorce, Britney lost custody of both of her kids, who were just toddlers at this point. And Kevin starts actively trying to block Britney from seeing her children at all. But despite all this trauma, Britney continued to work. You better work, bitch. The next year at the 2007 VMAs. So you remember the 2007 VMAs? Someone should have told her, no, not right now. But she ended up performing her song, Gimme More. And it was obvious. Oh, it was so bad. Poor Britney. Oh, I remember watching it like, oh no, Brit, exit, stage left. Go, girl. It was just clear she wasn't okay. She was just kind of going through the motions. She was just there. And then one night in early 2007, Britney walked into a hair salon and casually shaved all her hair off. Britney later said, quote, shaving my head was a way of saying to the world, fuck you. You want me to be pretty for you? Fuck you. You want me to be good for you? Fuck you. You want me to be your dream girl? Fuck you. When I read her book and I read that part, I was like, oh, that makes sense. It makes sense. I mean, the media, everyone framed her as being, oh, she's crazy. She's crazy. She's lost it. She's bald. Remember? You remember? It was wild. It was sad. Well, after this, Britney is sent to a psychiatric hospital because of her erratic behavior. She's put under psychiatric hold for 72 hours and isn't allowed to do anything alone. I mean, not even go to the bathroom. And a month later, in February of 2008, her family decides to put Britney under a conservatorship against her will. Jamie Spears, that's Britney's dad. Jamie, her dad, becomes her conservator. This would be the person now in charge of making all of her life decisions. This is bad news for Britney, who said, quote, even though I begged the court to appoint literally anyone else, and I mean anyone off the street, would have been better. They still made Jamie in charge. So why did he get the job, you know? Well, this is where things get sketchy. Just before the conservatorship was made official, Jamie started working with a woman named Lou Taylor. Now, Lou had a company called TriStar Sports and Entertainment Group. And this is when Lou becomes Britney Spears' business manager, which was a little fishy because Britney was Lou's only client at the time. But it gets fishier because Jamie Spears happened to owe Lou Taylor about $40,000 at this time. So, based off of observation, it seemed like Jamie was setting her up with this cushy job instead of paying her back. Or maybe, you know, with this cushy job, she was going to get paid back. Now, Jamie wasn't acting completely alone. Technically, a lawyer named Andrew Wallet was a co-conservator, which by the last name alone, I would not let him near my wallet. Yeah? No? Okay. Well, he got paid really well, is what I'm getting at. This wallet guy, he got an annual salary of $426,000, which Britney said was basically just to, quote, keep me from my own money. On top of that, Britney was given a court-appointed lawyer, and his name was Samuel Ingham III. She was not allowed to change this lawyer, and she hadn't had any say in picking him. And Brittany was forced to pay this man like $500,000 a year in attorney fees. So she's like hemorrhaging money to all these people and she doesn't even know what for. So look, just based off those three people or whatever, that's like $1 million already a year that Brittany is spending to be in this conservatorship that is doing what for her? She doesn't want to be in it. She's confused. Jamie, her father, wasn't like calling the shots from a distance. He wasn't handling Brittany's bills remotely or anything, no. Jamie set up an office inside of Brittany's home. He sat Brittany down and, according to her, said, "I call the shots. You sit right there in that chair and I'll tell you what goes on. I'm Britney Spears now." I'd be like, "Oh, you're Britney Spears now? You put on that cute little outfit and those heels and you go on stage and perform then. Okay, bye-bye now. Thank you." Going back to Wendy, remember Wendy was like death to all of them. But yeah, death to all of them. And while this whole thing is like going on behind closed doors, Brittany keeps working. She keeps showing up. She keeps smiling. She keeps performing. She filmed two episodes of How I Met Your Mother, which ended up being the two most watched episodes in the show's history. She recorded another album, Circus. I know, a good one. All while being unable to spend her own money or make any of her own decisions. Now, the next year, she went on a world tour for her album, Circus. And it grossed like $130 million. And 5% of it went straight to Lou Taylor, Jamie's little friend. So it seemed everyone benefited to keeping Miss Brittany working. And even though Brittany wasn't locked away in some dirty asylum, she was treated very much like a prisoner in her own home. Now, if Brittany wanted to go to like a party, a security team would make sure no one had any alcohol or was taking drugs, even if they were prescription. Or if they were like, "Hey, Motrin? No, bad." You know? Nothing. If Brittany wanted to go on a date, the person had to give like a full background check, had to do a blood test, sign an NDA, and would be informed of Brittany's medical and sexual history prior to the first date. I'm sure that's a real buzzkill. Brittany was not allowed to have a cell phone. The phones that she was allowed to use was always for like a limited amount of time, and then they would have parental controls on them. Poor thing. But you know, I know. Like, if you look at Brittany's Instagram now, I love Brittany. I love her to death. I love her. But maybe she shouldn't have a phone. Anywho, Brittany would have to take medication that was prepackaged in envelopes, and she was constantly watched by security, making sure she's taking her medications. Just sounded awful. In her book, Brittany wrote, "I would go to sleep early and then I would wake up and do what they told me again and again and again. It was like Groundhog Day. I did that for 13 years. That's so sad. It's not like she wasn't trying to fight this. I guess at multiple points throughout the conservatorship, especially at the beginning, Brittany tried to hire different lawyers but was never allowed to. So she just had to keep going along with it. In 2013, Brittany began the Piece of Me residency in Las Vegas. And even though she was at the lowest point of her life personally, professionally, people were blown away by her. Critics were saying that she literally changed the Vegas music scene. And again, she did all of this while under a conservatorship as a person who allegedly wasn't mentally able to take care of herself. Like, okay, sure. If she's not mentally able to take care of herself, how is she dancing like that? You know, it just didn't make sense. So no surprise, at the end of 2016, the residency was extended for 2 more years. Even though fans were very excited, poor Brittany was going through absolute hell. During her residency, Brittany was put on a strict diet. She was given an allowance of like $2,000 a week, which I'm sure a lot of us would be happy about, but she's Britney freaking Spears, okay? She was earning hundreds of thousands of dollars per performance, okay? Behind the scenes, Britney was doing everything to bring attention to her conservatorship. In 2016, she actually tried to talk about the situation on a talk show, but in the end, they edited it out, so they didn't even air that part. Poor thing. She was also actively trying to get the conservatorship overturned because of her dad, who seemed to have an alcohol problem, but nothing she did, it worked. During the Vegas residency, apparently Jamie found over-the-counter energy supplements. Mm-hmm. He looked through Britney's purse and he threatened to send her to rehab over it. What a dick. So we don't know behind the scenes what was going on. Would love to be a fly on the wall, right? Just so I could be a fly and then land on Jamie and fly poop all over him. But look, as a compromise, Jamie made Britney go to Alcoholics Anonymous 4 times a week. No exception. Nothing wrong with going to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think it should have been Jamie who was going and not her, but okay. So by the time the residency ended in 2017, more than 900,000 tickets had been sold. Britney generated like $137 million from ticket sales alone. By this point, Britney was tired. Okay, and she was ready to take a break. She's been performing all her freaking life. But she doesn't get to call the shots in her own life. There's this plan in the works for her to do another Vegas residency. This one was gonna be called Domination. Britney doesn't wanna do it, you know? She just wants to get out, but it's not up to her. So, October 2018, do you remember? I remember, I was watching it too. The live stream. Oh yeah, so it's the night when the Vegas people are going to announce that Britney is extending her stay and it's gonna be called Domination and blah, blah. They're announcing it to the media and to the public. It's like this big event. And they built this stage outside. They have live people with microphones. I think Mario Lopez was there. He's always there, I don't know why. And everyone was like, we can't wait. Miss Spears is coming out right now to make this crazy announcement. And then Britney like comes out and everyone was expecting her to be like, hey everyone, I'm gonna be extending my show to Domination and I hope to see you there. But instead, Britney shows up and she's like, and then she just walks out, being like, she just gets the fuck out of there. She doesn't say anything. It was the weirdest thing. A lot of us were confused. So it was like, okay, what's going on? Well, safe to assume, Jamie was pissed after this. I mean, everyone looked like a fool. That live stream or whatever, no one knew what to say because Britney came and then she like walked out and didn't say anything. And they were like, all right, okay. It was awkward. So Jamie was super pissed. He's like, whatever, this is his cash cow. So he makes arrangements over Christmas for Britney to be psychologically evaluated. This Looney Tune. It's not clear what the evaluation is or like what it requires, but Britney is informed that she failed the test. As a result, she's sent to a mental health facility in Los Angeles without knowing how long she would even be there for. You know what's crazy though? Like, this is Britney Spears. Let's just say like, okay, she really was struggling with something mentally. You think they would find her like some kind of like luxury resort situation? Like, you don't wanna go to a Los Angeles like hospital. So it's just weird that they didn't splurge for her care. But you think you would wanna take care of the person who's making you money? Well, in this facility, Britney was put on lithium, which made her pretty slow and lethargic. It can also mess with your perception of time. Can't it erase part of your memory and your brain and stuff? Like it fucks with your brain, essentially. But as a result, the whole new residency plan was completely canceled. And it seemed like Britney would be trapped in this conservatorship freaking forever. But then, in 2019, something unexpected happens. Someone tweets the phrase, #FreeBritney, and Britney's life changes forever. a few fans decide to publicly speak out about what's happening to Britney. It all started from a podcast called Britney's Gram, which was started by Tess Barker and Barbara Gray in 2017. It started out as a way to talk about Britney and her Instagram presence. Because at this time, she was like, it was weird. Pretty soon, Tess and Barbara realized that Britney might actually be in danger, and they voiced this on their podcast. Then they got an anonymous call from someone associated with the legal team controlling Britney. And basically, this was like a whistleblower who essentially told them, hey, like, you're on the right track. So on this podcast, they uploaded on April 16, 2019, it was like a special emergency episode, and it was titled hashtag Free Britney. Meanwhile, Britney is still in the mental hospital, and a nurse actually manages to show Britney a video of her conservatorship being discussed on a talk show. And that must have been like really kind of confusing, but exciting, but like what? And this is like the first time she saw the phrase Free Britney. Now this paved the way for a few documentaries to come out about Britney's situation. And you know, once there's a doc involved, people go nuts. Except for in Wendy's situation, it was like, ooh. So people are talking, people are supporting, a lot is going on. And all of this brought a new court hearing in September of 2019. This was a very big moment for not only Britney, but for all the people trapped in a conservatorship that maybe they did not feel they should be in. Britney went on the stand and said, quote, I'm not happy. I'm so angry. It's insane. And I'm depressed. I cry every day. My father loved the control he had over me. He loved it. End quote. All of this was audio recorded and listened to by the Free Britney public. The trial ended on November 21st, 2021, and the judge, Brenda J. Penny, ordered the conservatorship to immediately end. At this point, it had gone on for just under 14 years. Now, a lot of people were left thinking, well, why did this happen? Britney lost years of her life and was never the same after this all went down. But the truth was, the Free Britney movement wasn't just a catchy hashtag, it actually sparked real change in conservatorships within America. You see, before Britney, people in conservatorships could not hire their own attorney. They were court appointed. And those people can usually be bought, if you know what I am saying, you know? But according to our expert, Dr. Stacey Wood, since the overturning of Britney's case, that has changed. People can now hire their own legal representatives. Of course, it's different state by state, just saying that. And to be fair, I want to say conservatorships like don't just happen to women. There are lots of men who have been in similar situations, like Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys. Now, he's originally the reason I wanted to do this episode because I learned about Brian Wilson and what a genius he was. And I thought he was under a conservatorship. So I was like, oh, we have to do this, whatever. But legally, I found out he wasn't in a conservatorship. It came out later that someone had been controlling his life and his money for years. It was like the same, but not. It was a fake conservatorship, essentially. This guy basically like isolated Brian from everyone, his family, his friends, anyone he was trying to date, people who cared about him. He over-medicated Brian, controlled his every move, and even co-wrote Brian's autobiography. And look, even though we only featured stories about celebrities today, conservatorships aren't just things that happen to the rich and famous. Nay, absolutely not. I learned a lot. The majority of them in America are mostly for people who have gotten older, are just mentally unable to take care of themselves, and they actually can do more good than bad. In this situation, we talk about the bad, but there is some good to it. And it's important, I think, for us, like millennial generation, to know about, because we are approaching, as we're getting older, our parents and stuff are getting older too. And it's kind of like, you know, once your parents' health starts to really decline and maybe get to a point where you need help or something, that's where conservatorship can actually be very beneficial in a good way. And there's different levels to conservatorships. It's not like full psycho Britney. You know, conservators can help like with some people who don't have family to help out, or if they have like strained relationships with their parents or family, whatever. Like, here's a hypothetical scenario. Say your dad is aging and he isn't doing so well physically or mentally. He has a big house. He can't take care of it anymore. He can't remember to take his medication. He is maybe being dumb with the money, or his money, just not being smart. Maybe you financially can't send him to a home, and also live-in nurses are really expensive. And maybe you're in a position where you can't take them into your place, you know? In this case, a conservatorship could benefit you. With this, you can arrange for like a housekeeper, make sure he takes his medicine, make sure his finances stay in order, and make sure that he's just taking care of himself every day. And like, that's the reality of everyday conservatorships. But because of what we see in the media, we all immediately think of it as like this bad, awful, negative thing. But personally, I think it would benefit us to like know more about it, because we might, I hope not, but like, we might be in a position where you will have to use it, you know? And hey, if you have any experience with conservatorships that you want to share, would love to hear from you in the comments section. Yeah, so let me know. We have a holiday coming up, and we could play it safe, and we could just talk about the holiday itself, Mother's Day, you know, the origins of Mother's Day and all that. But I thought, wouldn't it be fun to go in the opposite direction? Throughout history, not everyone has had the greatest relationship with their moms. Maybe that's because some can just be straight up monsters. So join us next time as we discuss the dark history of momsters. By the way, next week we will be dark, so there won't be a new upload, but we'll be back on May 7th with the Dark History of Momsters. Hope to see you there. Now, I'd love to hear your reactions to today's story, so make sure to leave a comment below so I can see what you guys are saying, and your comment might even be featured in a future episode. Now, let's read a couple of comments that you guys have left me. Shelby Diz left me a comment. My baby girl arriving in February is named Eloise Faye. Shelby, congratulations. Oh, I hope everything goes well and you have a happy, healthy, beautiful birthing experience. I love the name. Sometimes I wish people would hire me to name their children, because I low-key have a talent for it. Here you go. I'm doing you guys a favor. If you're having a kid, I have some names for you. These are boys' names. You ready? Write it down. Okay. First name, Gus. Middle name, T. Last name, Wind. You can use that. The next example I have is Chris. Middle name, P. Last name, Bacon. For my high cholesterol lovers. Or what about this one? This one's one of my favorites. Don't steal it. Ben Dover. I have lots more. Eloise is cute too, but I love Ben Dover. Come on. Okay. Anyways, good luck with everything, and I hope you have a beautiful, lovely birthing experience. Thank you. Okay. Ashley Williams, 5898, left me a spicy comment on the Typhoid Mary episode. Girl, you did a whole MMM about her. Why are we pretending this is new info? Ashley. Hi, sweetie. Listen, we need to talk. I think you might be confused. I did an episode on Bloody Mary. Maybe that's who you're thinking of? I didn't do an episode on Typhoid Mary, babe. No, I didn't. If you would go and you would look Typhoid Mary murder mystery, whatever, on YouTube, it would take maybe like 3 seconds. You would see that I actually didn't do that episode. So I'm sorry you are confused. And yeah. Anywho, did you watch the Typhoid Mary episode? Because she's one of the most misunderstood women in history. Well, one of them, you know. She's a villain to some people, whatever. But since you already knew all of it, what were your thoughts? Don't try and read me when you're coming with incorrect information. Oh my God. Jeez. Anyways, I hope you liked the video. Oh, Nora619 left us an episode suggestion on our Mussolini episode. I forgot about that. Speaking of dictators, Fidel Castro would be an interesting deep dive. He avoided assassination attempts 638 times. That must literally be a world record. Some of the attempts were pretty creative too, like infecting his wetsuit with flesh-eating bacteria. Unique! That's great. I like this. That's a good episode suggestion. Wow. I like a dictators episode. I'm very interested in dictators because, you know, I hate them. So I'm always trying to learn about them. But I think that's a good idea. Dictator focus episodes are some of my favorite episodes to research because there's just so much that I don't know about you guys, but for me, I never learned about or heard about. And it's like, once you understand it, you're like, oh shit, the girls are fighting, but it's dictators. Yeah. Oh, thank you for the suggestion. It's a good one. I'll look into it. Don't worry. Well, you guys, I love you for watching and I appreciate you for being here and engaging. Keep commenting because maybe your comment will be featured. Hey, did you know that you can join me over on my YouTube where you can actually watch these episodes? Yeah, on Thursdays after the podcast airs. And while you're there, you can also catch my murder mystery and makeup where I haven't done Typhoid Mary yet. And don't forget to subscribe. And hey, if you don't know, Dark History is an Audio Boom original. A special thank you to our expert, Dr. Stacey Wood, and I'm your host, Bailey Sarian. I hope you have a good day, you make good choices, and I'll be talking to you guys later. Goodbye.